We'd love to hear what works best in your life. A CBD-centric model, all the activity concentrated in the centre of a city, or a more decentralised, polycentric city where people work and play in hubs closer to home. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Is a vibrant CBD important in your life, or is it better to have smaller village models of urban land use? You can tell us about it on the Radio National Facebook page or send a text 0418 226 576. Dr. Marcus Spiller is one of our guests today. He's principal and partner of SGS Economics and Planning, past president of the Planning Institute of Australia, and he's joining us from Melbourne. Marcus, great to have you here.
Nice to be with you, Hilary.
And David Levinson, too, is a Professor of Transport at the University of Sydney. David, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you for having me.
It's great that we've got people representing two of the bigger cities in Australia, because we will be focusing some of our discussion there today. Marcus, I'll start with you. What does research tell us about cities with a focus on strong CBDs?
Well, the strong CBDs are really a powerhouse for the economy that stretches well beyond just the locale of the central city. Those parts of the metropolitan area are the parts that have the best access to the metropolitan pool of labour, the skills that businesses need. They are the places that host highly specialised skills and services that can really only be in the centre of the city. And they're the places where businesses have best access to key decision makers, whether they be in the corporate world or in government. So for particular types of businesses, the ones that sometimes go by the name of knowledge-based businesses or creative businesses, being in the heart of the city gives them tremendous productivity advantages, and their productivity helps to drive the economy, as I say, beyond the boundaries of the central city to reach out into the wider parts of the metropolitan area and into the regional parts of our country.
And Marcus, tell us a little bit more about this idea that there are some skills and services that can only really be at their best in a central city. A lot of people have said, look, we can Zoom our decision makers. We can make times to meet people online these days. We don't need to physically be in the same spot. Are you saying there are some industries that really do benefit from that close physical contact?
There are indeed, and I think as we pull out of this COVID crisis, I think we will see pretty rapid, actually, shift back to face-to-face work in particular types of business. Now, these are the types of business that rely on collaborative problem-solving, really. You can call it creativity, or you could call it innovation, but basically where people need to be together to spark off each other, to create insights that happen in an orchestrated way, but not necessarily planned way. So they're the sort of serendipitous things that happen that help create a more productive workplace. I work in a consultancy, and during the heart of the lockdown last year here in Melbourne, which was long and hard, we had our Zoom get-togethers, including as a team, and we've got a team of about 40 people here in Melbourne. And when the team were asked, where would you like to be? If you could go anywhere in the world, where would you like to be? And I was astonished to hear that the majority of people just wanted to be back in the office, just to be with that vibe, to be more productive and engaged. So I think for particular types of businesses, it's very important to have that face-to-face contact. They don't always have to have it, but it is important from time to time. There's a lot of business, however, Hilary, that can be done in the suburbs, so to speak. There's lots of perhaps more routine functions, process functions, back office functions, administrative functions that I think will probably accelerate their moves out of the central city to those suburban hubs that you mentioned.
Marcus Spiller, just before we move on to David Levinson and have a chat to him, can you tell us what a polycentric city is, the opposite idea, I guess, to that big centralised central hub?
Yeah, you've got it. A city of many cities. I think, the vision for greater metropolitan Sydney is a good one. You know, there's a city of a metropolis of three cities. the harbour city, the river city and the park city, each of which would have their principal CBD, if you like, so that you're not relying on a single centre for everything that happens in the metropolis, but you have a distributed pattern of work and service distribution. You can make a bit of a distinction between there is a bit of a distinction between broadly spread jobs across the suburbs versus a pattern for your metropolis which tries to herd the jobs into a handful of major hubs so that they are like secondary CBDs in the metropolis, you know, places like Parramatta or Dandenong here in Melbourne. And the, you know, the vision is that if you have more of these, or if you have your city configured around these hubs, you can get the productivity advantages of that agglomeration that I spoke of, but also reduce people's travel time to work and give them much more convenient access to a wide range of services.
And livability, that's a term Absolutely. That crops up a lot.
Absolutely.
Let's hear from David Levinson, Professor of Transport at the University of Sydney. We've been chatting to Dr. Marcus Spiller, Principal and Partner at SGS Economics and Planning and past President of the Planning Institute of Australia. And we'd love to hear your thoughts too. Send us a text 0418 226 576. Which do you prefer? A big centralised CBD that's thriving and jumping with vibrancy and jobs, or smaller village models separated out throughout your main city where people can be a bit closer to home for work and play? David Levinson, what are your thoughts on that polycentric city model first?
Well, we have polycentric cities, and I think we really should be thinking about it as we really have a very dispersed city. And most people don't work in the CBD. Most people don't visit the CBD every day or even every week. People work in one suburb and live in another suburb, and most people don't have the kind of elite knowledge worker jobs that require a lot of lunch meetings with other people who are elite knowledge workers and can get on with their work, you know, behind a computer, those who work. And in fact, most people don't even, I mean, you sort of barely 50% of the people work in offices across the metropolitan area. Most people outside of the CBD don't work in offices. They work in other types of environments, shops and hospitals and police stations and schools and parks and all sorts of other places. And so I think when you think about this from a transport perspective, the CBD is a unique problem because it's a relatively high concentration of employment. And so we have to serve that with mass transit, because you can't have everyone driving to such a place, and the people are far enough away that they can't really walk or bike to get there. So we have this public transit network serving the CBD, but that's only serving a very small share of the population. I mean, in Greater Sydney, it's barely above 20% of the people overall who use public transit. Of course, in the CBD, it's a very high percentage of people who are going to work by public transit. Most people are commuting from a suburb to another suburb, and most people are doing that by automobile in Australia. And so are those jobs less important or less valuable? I don't know that that's really true. I mean, I think the early 20th century model of people had to work together was valid then, because we didn't have the kinds of communications links that we have now, and work had to be done at a physical location, and a lot more work was industrial and place-based. But a lot of work today is a lot less fixed in space. And so people have opportunities to work where they want to if they're, you know, knowledge workers, except for the times that they actually need the face-to-face meeting. You know, I work at a university where we have, obviously, in normal times, we would have had lots of students on campus and lots of faculty on campus continuing to meet in person. And we've spent the last year and a half, and I've been coming into the office fairly regularly, but most of my colleagues haven't been. We'll have to see if productivity has dropped. I know, you know, there's discussions about that, but a lot of research can go on. I mean, research certainly that's data-based can be done on a computer more or less anywhere, and people have instant access to each other via tools like Slack and you know, online meetings via Zoom and so on.
I guess, David, there's that argument about, you know, the serendipitous meeting. We don't know what kind of amazing innovations and collaborations might have come out of those accidental meetings between cross-disciplinary colleagues in the CAF. But I know that you did a paper on 30-minute cities, which is an idea. The 20-minute or 30-minute city's been tossed around as a potential planning model for big cities for some time. What did you find when it came to transport? Can you have it all? Can you have accessible jobs by bike and car and walking and public transport in either the decentralized or the centralized model, or do you have to choose?
Well, I think it depends on how large your city is, right? So in a small city, everyone can get everywhere within 30 minutes by car or even by bike if it's small enough. And in a large city, you can't get everywhere within 30 minutes. But the question is, can you get to your job within 30 minutes? Or in the way they define the 30-minute city in the Sydney's, in the Greater Sydney Commission's plans, is can you get to your center, one of your three cities in the metropolis of three cities? Can you get to either the Sydney CBD or the Parramatta CBD or the Western Sydney CBD, whatever that is, within 30 minutes by public transport? And the answer is you can get there by car within 30 minutes, but most people can't actually get there by public transport within 30 minutes. And I think that's an issue. And another issue is that cities like Sydney are fairly lopsided, right? Most of the jobs in Sydney are in the eastern part of the city, and a majority of the population lives to the west. So you have these tidal flows of commuters coming in the morning and going out in the evening. And that directionality is very inefficient from a transport point of view. I mean, it might be efficient from an agglomeration economics point of view, but from a transport point of view, it means that we're using our system in a peaked way, which means we have to build more capacity because our flows are so directional. And if we could have a more balanced distribution of jobs and housing, that is more jobs in Western Sydney and more residents in Eastern Sydney, commutes would be shorter. I think that's one of the issues, is that we solve land use problems and sort of assuming that the transport network is fixed, and we build transport networks ignoring the land use implications. And we really need to be thinking about these decisions together and how can we design cities that work better. And if we look at, we did a study comparing more than 100 cities around the world, the accessibility is much higher by really all modes in East Asia and in Europe because of the land use pattern. Obviously, the motorway system in Australia is better than it typically would be in China or Europe, not as good as North America, but the land use is much more dispersed. Now, from an efficiency point of view, that means it takes longer to get to your job, or you can get to fewer jobs in the same amount of time. The trade-off is, of course, you get a larger house and you have more land, and maybe you want to be able to access space, access recreational areas, access parks, and so on. And so there's a trade-off in quality of life versus access to jobs. And so, you know, economic productivity is not the only thing that we're thinking about when designing cities. And
indeed,
so you have to think about these trade-offs.
Exactly.
The 20-minute neighborhood concept's a bit different. And that's really more about, can you get to your everything but shops, like everything but jobs. Can you get to your shops? Can you get to your schools? Can you get to your doctor within a 20-minute round trip? And so one of the issues is, you know, sort of the 30-minute one-way trip and the 20-minute round trip is really a 10-minute one-way trip. And so is your neighborhood within a 10-minute walk or bike from where you live? And for most people it is, but that doesn't mean your neighborhood sort of has every shop that you would like. My neighborhood, I can get to three or four butchers and three or four bakers, which is great, but there's only one grocery store. So it's or full service grocery store. So you don't have as many choices as you would in a denser neighborhood. And this is a question of people's preferences, and it's a question of residential density. In places where more people live, there'll be more shops that are available within a 10-minute walk. And so we have to think about what is it that we value the most. And you know, there's a lot of people who don't necessarily want to walk, which, I mean, obviously planners want people to walk, and I want other people to walk. But if I'm a driver, I'm not a driver generally, but if I were a driver, I would want other people to walk so that I could drive more easily. And that's, you know, one of these trade-offs that we have to think about as well.
I want to follow up that 20-minute neighbourhood issue because, Marcus Spiller, I noticed that it's a key policy direction in Melbourne's long-term land use plan, Plan Melbourne 2017 to 2050. And you've done some consulting work for the state government. What effects might it have if they are working on that 20-minute neighbourhood idea? Is that actually achievable?
Oh, absolutely it is. And it's interesting to, you know, to create a kind of a stark contrast between the decentralised city and the centralised city. But in fact, I think it's more helpful to think of a city of nested communities. So the needs that people have for their day-to-day lives, you know, school, shops, healthcare, and so on, there's every possibility that we can plan and deliver our cities so that people can access all those things in 20 minutes. And in fact, the bulk of our great cities here in Australia already offer that. The real problem lies in the new communities that we're creating on the, you know, on the outskirts of our cities, these large, lower density communities that have been mushrooming now for the better part of a couple of decades. And you certainly can't achieve your day-to-day needs through active transport within 20 minutes. And by active transport, I mean walking or cycling, that kind of thing.
Well, and a lot of them have little lonely bus stops waiting for buses that are not coming for some time.
Yeah. So the 20-minute city vision for those communities is really not being delivered. But I just wanted to pick up a point about the productivity of the central city and just emphasise that the highly productive or elite knowledge workers, as they've been referred to, are pretty vital to the whole community. You know, our Yarra Valley winemakers wouldn't be as good as at what they do without the access to the specialised services that are delivered out of central Melbourne and central Sydney.
What kind of services, Mark? Are you thinking of advertising?
Advertising, coming up with strategy, coming up with marketing, brokerage to access new markets, advice on how to source technology and who to partner with, all these things that are rather invisible when you rock up to the cellar door. There's a lot happening and that requires clever people doing clever stuff, and the central city is the host to that work, and for the reasons I mentioned earlier.
Though, Marcus, but it does sound a little bit, I just want to quickly, I know we don't have much time left, it's starting to sound a little bit like we cede the CBD to the cool kids, you know, all the knowledge workers get to hang out there, and like you described it, all the back office staff, the admin grunt work gets shunted out elsewhere. Is that a good model?
Oh, well, look, I think there's good news here in the sense that I think the flow of I'll call them routine jobs, to the suburban hubs is going to accelerate. So the kind of decentralisation model that planners have hoped for, I think, will happen. And that will actually create more room for the knowledge economy to grow in the central city. So we're going to get, to some extent, our planning vision coming together. The downside of this, Hilary, and you've put your finger on it, is it does create this divided city in terms of socio-economy. And that's something that we really need to deal with. And our attitudes and policies on affordable housing, social housing investment, and other ways to democratise the central city, I think, are vitally important to counteract that trend.
Yes, indeed. Productivity is certainly one element we want to look at. Equality is another. It's been a fascinating discussion. Obviously, we could have gone on for hours and days. But thank you both so much for your time here today on Life Matters.
Pleasure, Hilary.
Yeah.
Dr. Marcus Spiller, Principal and Partner at SGS Economics and Planning. He's past President of the Planning Institute of Australia. And you heard from David Levinson too, Professor of Transport at the University of Sydney, looking into that idea of 30-minute cities. He's done quite a bit of research on that. Michael McKenzie, what do our listeners think about these different ideas of how to run a city?
Well, they were clearly listening hard, Hill, because there's been a range of responses as that conversation evolved. Jacqueline texted in to say, regarding CBD versus local commercial hubs, it's a pointless contest, she says. We need both, and each serves a different purpose. Another person texted in to say, I work as a manager with a team of 8 digital product managers based in Melbourne. When we get the team together in person, we can discuss freely, collaborate, break off, and whiteboard complex problems. The creativity and innovation flows when we are there in person. Over the past year, I have tried and failed, says the texter, to replicate this over Zoom, and it doesn't work. Likewise, relationships are formed and thrive with staff morning teas, after-work drinks. Again, we tried running online games nights and virtual drinks, and it just doesn't work. We need the CBD in the office, says this person, but I can definitely acknowledge the productivity doing solo work from home. And I've got a really cool story about that from someone called Karina, who lived and worked in Sydney, and I'll tell you that story later. But in just a moment, Hillary, I'll be back as we look at the latest research into what constitutes a hate crime and the ripple effects of that through local communities.
Really interesting stuff. Michael McKenzie, thank you.
Thank you.
This is Life Matters on Radio National.